Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper, and I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Roland. I'm your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who believe in the founding principles of this nation and understand and truly take responsibility for the fact that we are the nation. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is the pros and cons of social promotion. For those of you who, like my friend Linda in the chat room, just got finished watching Ben Carson on Glenn Beck's show, you may have noticed that one of the reasons he cites for our country going down the road of I'm entitled to everything, give it to me now, is that we no longer educate ourselves or our children. And the prevalence of social promotion and the ideology that backs it up is one of the reasons why we do not educate our children. Social promotion, for those of you who aren't familiar with the term, means, and I quote from an article from the internet, and this is the basic definition no matter who you talk to, social promotion is the practice of promoting students to the next grade even though they have not acquired minimum competencies expected of their current grade. In other words, promoting a student from fourth grade to fifth grade, even though they have not absorbed and learned the academic skills and concepts of fourth grade, in order to promote their social well-being. The argument over social promotions versus retention as a means of educating children and making sure that they know what they're supposed to know has been going on for at least the last 25 years. During the Clinton administration, it was considered to be a negative activity within the school system, mainly because of the long-term and short-term results. Students who were socially promoted was often done because it was believed that their self-esteem would suffer if they were not allowed to progress to the next grade with their friends, and that it was better to have somebody who was 6 feet tall and 16, not having classes with people who were 10-year-olds, which kind of makes sense. But then again, the 16-year-old who was reading at the level of 10-year-olds was going to have a very, very difficult problem keeping up with the increased academic requirements. And my friend Linda mentioned that Ben Carson talked about the fact that his mother believed in the benefits of education, learning what you had to know. Well, social promotion says that the purpose of education is not actually acquiring academic skills, it is socialization and psychological health that our schools have as their main and most important purpose, the building of the self-esteem of our citizens based on some criteria about feeling good about yourself rather than actual achievement. And that this main purpose of public education is what we are supposed to be worried about. This is the main reason that social promotions were very common. Well, as I said, during Clinton's administration, the negative effects were beginning to be felt. After social promotions had been the norm for about 25 years, the workforce was suffering very badly. Employers were having to institute remedial reading programs for new hires because they couldn't understand the employee handbook, let alone the directions for their particular department's activities. Also, people who were socially promoted had a false sense of confidence in their academic abilities and ran into a very large, very uncomfortable, very bruising stone wall when they discovered that, oops, wait a minute, a high school diploma is supposed to mean that I can add 3 plus 5 and get 8 reliably 5 times out of 5. And I should be able to figure out how to make change when somebody buys something for $2.40 and hands me a $5 bill without having a calculator or my boss tell me how much money to give back. Well, we are still having the same argument, ladies and gentlemen. I've researched several articles on both sides of the question, one from a website that is devoted to the needs of special children, special education, learning disabled, behaviorally, mentally, and emotionally handicapped, with many, many clues as to how to use the need for social promotion to prevent your child from being retained in class. And the pros that they cite are that your child's psyche will be damaged if he or she fails, and they will suffer incredible feelings of guilt and despair and be totally turned off of the idea of academics because they weren't allowed to go on to the next grade with their friends. Also, they cite that the retained students will increase the class size and the student-to-teacher ratio and make it more difficult for students to learn in larger classrooms. They cite also the long-term effects that students who are retained do not significantly improve, and they wind up basically getting turned off from school, and they have a higher dropout rate, and fewer of them finish high school. All of these things are very likely quite true. They're demonstrably true. And it's unfortunate that this is the effect. Retention is not always the answer. Now, the arguments against social promotion are that it gives a child a sense of false self-esteem. You are basically telling that child that he or she has the capabilities of every other child in the classroom and is ready to take the next step up in difficulty level and body of knowledge to be learned, when they actually are not. If you do not know how to multiply and divide, you are going to have a terrible time understanding fractions, for example. So that means that you are going to fall further behind because you didn't get the basic skills you needed to advance with the class. Another con toward social promotion is that it tends to lower the expectations for everyone, because many schools who socially promoted discovered that in order to get that student actually through the grade the second time, they had to lower the expectations of the whole class and reduce the amount of knowledge that the children were supposed to master, or change the grading scale so that a 75 was passing instead of an 80, or a 50 was passing instead of a 60, in order to push this child on through the educational system. The other con is that the workforce suffers, as I mentioned earlier. You are graduating people who have a high school diploma, which indicates to an employer that they have mastered certain academic skills that will be needed in the workplace. Reading, the ability to do basic math, an understanding of the English language so that they can talk with the public and make themselves understood, and understand people talking to them from many different and diverse economic, cultural, and educational backgrounds. So that when this child with that high school diploma, who is reading at fourth grade level and doing math at third, is hired at McDonald's, he or she very likely will not retain his position. Because, like I said, if the cash register breaks, they're totally lost as to how much change to give back. Or they don't understand standard American English, and unless you say, "Hey, bro, what's up?" they don't know that you're saying hello. The other aspect of social promotion is I don't know what to call it other than a civil rights issue or a minority issue, in that many students who are retained come from deprived economic backgrounds, or the children of parents who are not well educated, who are immigrants and are English is not their native language, etc. And that this obviously creates problems for them in acclimatizing and acculturizing and being able to make a living in an English-speaking country. So holding them back, they may be very intelligent if you speak Spanish or Vietnamese or Chinese or Arabic or something else. That doesn't do you a great deal of good in a country in which the vast majority of people do not speak those languages at all fluently, if at all. The basic reason that we continue to have this argument, ladies and gentlemen, is because we have lost the understanding of what an education is. The current educational theory and ideology, which is being promoted in our public schools, thanks to the Department of Education and the progressive element which has overtaken our lawmaking process and our executive branch of government, is that schools are not there to teach you academic skills and competencies. Schools are there to socialize you and give you an understanding that group integrity is much more important than individual achievement, and to ensure your psychological health. And that if we just do it right and promote you, somehow or other, if you're stupid, we can fix it. Well, as unkind and uncompassionate and unprogressive as it sounds, you can't fix stupid. And unfortunately, all the compassion and kindness and federal funding in the world is not going to change that. It does not mean that the government should shoot you because you're not academically bright, or that you should be segregated off into feeble-minded farms, which was the requirement in Jean Webster's novel, Dear Enemy, and in her prior novel, Daddy Longlegs. Jean Webster was a progressive, a Fabian socialist, who wrote her novels in the early part of the 1900s. She was definitely a early 1900s version of Hillary Clinton, and that tells you something. Margaret Sanger was a role model for both of them. Unfortunately, we have got to look at our world and the human race practically and logically, not from a eugenics point of view, as in Nazi Germany, where anybody who didn't measure up on an academic IQ test was decreed feeble-minded and sent happily off to the concentration camp to take a nice shower in a room with no drains. But we do have to recognize that some people are smarter than others, and that all the equal rights laws and FAPE, free appropriate public education, and accommodations and individualized education plans and everything else are not going to make them smart. It is sad that not everyone is Einstein or Da Vinci, but it is fact. Our approach to public education, ladies and gentlemen, is so incredibly ridiculous that just thinking about it gives me a migraine headache. For the first time in our history as a race of living beings, we have an opportunity to actually change the way we educate our children and give them as much opportunity as they are capable of taking advantage of to learn what they need to know to be successful human beings in all areas of their lives. But we don't use it. We persist in demanding that we keep the classroom model that was great in 1865, even though we have technology that makes it justifiably obsolete. I have mentioned several times on this show an institution called Carpe Diem. This is a prep school in, I believe it's Colorado, that uses technology in an intelligent and positive way to really put into practice what the Department of Education says schools have to do. Provide individualized education for each child, teaching to their strengths and helping them overcome their weaknesses, and allowing them to progress at their own pace and still setting standards of knowledge acquired in order to progress to the next level. Like the $6 million man, we have the technology. We can fix him. But we're not using it. Every public school in this nation is running out spending millions of dollars on computer labs and individual laptops for students and high-tech radio studios in high schools and superior surveillance systems and metal detectors, but they are not paying any attention to what it is that's making our schools unsuccessful. The social promotion versus retention argument is moot. It makes no sense because we are not teaching kids with the tools we have available to give them the opportunity to learn. We are hung up on the idea that school is supposed to be some sort of psychological breeding ground for happy socialized groupies. That's not what education is. Dr. Carson tonight on Glenn Beck Show illustrated for the world what an educated human being is. He wasn't given an education. He worked for one. He put forth effort, thanks to his mother who demanded it of him and his brothers and sisters. She understood that the pathway for any black child to be successful in a segregated world was to be well educated. Because then people would listen to what you said instead of only looking at the color of your skin. We have taken that brilliant woman's common sense understanding of what her children needed and turned it into, instead of Dr. Martin Luther King's judged by the content of your character, instead of the color of your skin, turned it into what color you are means you get extra privileges because we feel sorry for you. Talk about lowered expectations. If I were an African-American woman, I would be incredibly insulted at the way African-American students are dealt with in schools. I would not accept that somebody was going to look at me and say, oh, you don't have to work so hard because you're totally incapable of it, so we'll give you an A simply because you're here. No. Never. I would not stand for that kind of degradation. And yet, over and over and over again, you have people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, the vultures on the African-American community, who are busily telling their brothers and sisters that, we know you're stupid, but it's okay. You were made that way because your great-great-grandfather was a slave. And somebody owes you for that. No, nobody owes you for that. Nobody owes you a damn thing. Excuse my language, ladies and gentlemen. But this whole argument that's been going on for the last 25 to 30 years over should you hold kids back when they don't know anything, or should you promote them so they'll feel good about themselves and not have a psychological handicap the rest of their lives, makes no sense in today's technological world. In today's world, we don't have to make that distinction. We don't have to make the choice between promoting them when they don't know anything and holding them back and damaging them. We have the technology to give them an equal opportunity. And that's what education is supposed to be, not an equal outcome. The fundamental disconnect that gives rise to this pros and con argument of social promotion is the inability to understand that you can't get equal outcomes with people. You cannot have that. A child whose ability to think, reason, remember, and understand is impaired is not going to, with the application of lots of money and a computer, all of a sudden become Leonardo da Vinci or Stephen Hawking. But that child whose ability to understand and retain information academically is impaired may have other skills that could keep them alive and allow them to earn a living, be independent and self-reliant. But we don't look at those. We use our vocational educational programs as dumping grounds for behavioral problems. We want jobs for everybody, but everybody's job has to be CEO of a corporation, or a doctor, or a lawyer, or a teacher, or a politician, God forbid. That's what everybody's job is supposed to be. No. Some people's jobs are going to be right in the garbage truck because we need somebody to haul away the trash. Somebody's job is going to be fixing your washing machine. Fixing my washing machine because I have no clue how to do it. Somebody's job is going to be sweeping up the school because kids are pigs. And it doesn't take a master's degree to be a good custodian, or whatever the politically correct term is. And it's honorable to do work of any kind. There is no dishonorable job other than thief or liar. Honest work used to be the goal of all of our kids in school. Even 150 years ago, in a one-room schoolhouse where you had kids ages 6 all the way up to 18, you passed to the next level in the McGuffey reading series when you'd mastered the level you were on. If you were able to go to the third reader when you were 6, fine and dandy, you could. If you weren't able to go to the third reader until you were 16, that's the way it was. We have an illegitimate, I use that term on purpose, an illegitimate governmental interference in the way we educate children. We do not accept the fact that human beings are not alike. And over and over and over again, in our public schools, we are teaching children by example that alike and equal mean the same thing. They don't. Learning came easily to me, for which I thank God. And I loved learning and still do. I was born that way. I didn't have an injection of cash when I was 6 months old to make me brighter than average. It wasn't the school that I went to that made me love learning. That was part of my psyche, my personality, and my family life. Learning was an important thing in my family. I understand that in many families it is not. And I feel badly for the children in those families. And schools can help to counter that. But not if we persist in using an outmoded model with impossible expectations. We cannot have our cake and eat it too. We cannot decide to socially promote to make a child feel good about himself, throw him into the world at the age of 17, and watch him fail to be able to support himself and run to the food stamp store when he's 17 and a half because he can't hold a job. And we can't hold that child in third grade until he's 6'4" with 8-year-olds. Because we cannot have what all of the child psychologists and educational theorists say we're supposed to have with the model that we're using. Social promotion for some children is beneficial. I can give you an example from my own teaching experience. I had an adult student years ago when I was working as a private tutor who was a very intelligent, articulate man. But his reading skills were at about a second grade level. He was a high school graduate. He got good grades, had a good job, supported his family, and as I said, very intelligent, very articulate. But he could not figure out the printed word. He simply could not decode words. Phonics didn't penetrate. He had to sight read. He had to memorize all the words, all the look of the words, in order to read. He got good grades in school, not because he could read, but because he listened and retained what he heard. An incredible memory and a thinking mind. His grades would have been even better if he had gone to school during a time when his special accommodations would have been being given oral exams instead of written. If he had had tests read to him, as many of our students do now, he'd have been a straight-A student, honor roll, and probably valedictorian of his high school class. Because his understanding of the spoken word was vastly superior to his ability to decode the written word. Social promotion would have been logical and sensible for him. But I had a student today in my ISS room whose reading skills are at about third grade level and who can't remember what you said for longer than a minute and a half. His vocabulary is about 700 words, one-third of which are profane. And today he had to read a short story, The Necklace by Guy de Maupassant, which was written in the 19th century and translated in the 19th century to English. And he was lost. Every sentence had, in the introductory part, had four words in it that he had no clue of the meaning. He didn't know what frugal meant. He didn't know what tapestry was. He didn't know what oriental meant. He didn't know what graceful meant. He didn't know what a convent was. And I was reading out loud and making him highlight words he didn't know. The whole page was covered with highlights. So when he's reading something, he gets the, and, will, go, see, by, for, of, to, then, now, it. Not a lot of retention there, ladies and gentlemen. Not a lot of understanding of what the story's about. Social promotion for him is just adding one more person to the welfare rolls. Unless his family has enough money to let him sit in an office in a family-owned company, smile at customers, and go home at 2 o'clock. and his family doesn't. And they're middle class, working people. But because he has learning difficulties that cannot be overcome by money and IEPs, he has been promoted. He's in eighth grade now. And you can bet just about anything you want to name that he'll be promoted to ninth, and it will be the high school's turn to try to figure out what to do with it. And in that case, I'm just selfish enough to say, yay, social promotion, because keeping him in school means that he's not going to be spending 3 out of 5 3 days a month in ISS because he can't behave. And 99% of his behavior problems are due to the fact that he knows he has no way to compete with or match or equal his peers in academics. And I could name at least 10 others who are in exactly the same case. And social promotion is an answer to getting him through the system and out so that everybody else behind him has a shot at learning something because he's not disrupting their classes by being retained. And it all comes back to what is it that we're doing when we say we're educating our kids? Retention is not very effective. The advocates of social promotion point this out, and statistically they're correct. It isn't. But it's ineffective not because it's retention and it makes them feel bad. It's ineffective because they aren't very bright. For whatever reason, they just don't learn well. So whether you socially promote them or hold them back, they're still not going to be able to go to college and become Barack Obama. God forbid that anybody should become Barack Obama, but anyhow, they're not going to go to college and become Dr. Ben Carson. Not with a vocabulary of 700 words, they're not. And with the inability to read. And yet, our president stands up in front of this country and says that it's the right of everybody to go to college. What in the name of all that is holy is the matter with the man? That is the most absurd statement I have heard come out of his mouth. And believe me, he has a record of a lot of absurd statements. But that one takes the cake. I know that his voting bloc are not real bright. Otherwise, they wouldn't have voted for him. But good Lord, let's use a little common sense, shall we? No matter how hard you try and how much money you throw at a person whose ability to learn is handicapped, it's not going to make that go away. So what do? Send them out there to fail and go on the welfare roll? Or do we try to look for an alternative pathway that would give them something that they could be successful at? Education is a wonderful thing. Education is an opportunity. It was that the founding fathers believed in, that opportunity, that chance to get at books and get at teaching. Not the equal outcome, but the equal opportunity. And lots of people, given that opportunity, either don't have the drive or the ability to take full advantage of it. And that, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, is a truism. The idiotic assumption that progressives have convinced 51% of this population to believe in, that government can somehow guarantee equal outcomes to everybody, is one of the reasons why we are still stuck using an educational system to achieve an impossible object. We can't continue in the way we are going, ladies and gentlemen, and have a population that can govern themselves as individuals or as a nation. Our founding fathers believed in universal education because they understood that only a thinking, rational person can govern himself both as an individual and in group, community, state, and nation. You cannot govern yourself operating only on emotional reaction to stimuli. It is not possible, and it is not desirable, even if it were possible. Yet our educational system has gotten so convolutedly twisted that that's what its philosophy is. Social promotion versus retention is an unsolvable argument because it denies the basic nature of human beings as individuals. It presumes that if we just find the magic key, we can make everyone alike in their abilities, their desires for achievement, their capability of learning, their attention span, their behavioral norms, their emotional health, their psychological wellness. We'll find that magic key and we'll all be happy, functioning sheep. That is what is behind the ridiculous argument over pros and cons of social promotion. Neither retention nor social promotion is going to fix the fact that some people are stupid and some people are smart. And there isn't any way that the smart ones are all of a sudden going to ascend to godhood and magically touch the stupid ones and make them smart too. It doesn't happen. Instead of arguing about whether or not we retain people in the same grade or promote them socially because they're too tall or their psyche will suffer, what we have to do is look at what education actually is and decide what we want it to be. Do we want education to be a factory to produce happily well-adjusted, socialized members of the communist collective, mini-blogs without the electronic implants? Or do we want education to be the opportunity to learn academic and intellectual skills and competencies? What is it that we want out of our public schools? Why do you send your kids to school, aside from the fact that you'd like to get them out of your hair for 7.5 hours a day? And you need a babysitter and you can't afford one. Why do we send kids to school? I really want everybody out there, ask yourself that. Why did your parents send you to school? Why do you send your kids? Why do your children send theirs? What is it that they expect to get out of school? I know what I expected to get out of school. I know what I expect my grandchildren to get out of school. I know what my husband expected his daughters to get out of school. I know what my sisters expected to get out of school. But I have no clue what the liberal progressives expect anybody to get out of school other than how to be stupid and be praised for it. And as much as I dislike conspiracy theory and they're out to get us, I can't help but be convinced that it's a conspiracy, and they are out to get us. Because they are creating a climate in which nobody is capable of thinking for themselves. No one is capable of reading. And if they are, they must be quickly steered into colleges where they can be indoctrinated with the liberal, progressive, communist ideology and then work for the government to keep the stupid who can't read in line with lots of food stamps and welfare. And I know that sounds simplistic. And I know there are people out there who are saying, oh, well, you're just prejudiced, or you're a racist, or you just don't like the president, or you just aren't compassionate or kind or loving. And okay, fine. Maybe I'm not. But I am practical, and I am not stupid. And I know that no matter how much I would like everybody else to have the same level of learning and ease of doing it that I have, I'm not going to get it. And that doesn't mean that I won't bend over backwards to rephrase, reteach, illustrate, dance if I have to try to get knowledge into the heads of the children I teach, because I do. When I was reading de Maupassant's story today, I read it the way I normally read out loud to my husband. When I read aloud, I am basically telling a story with expression, with changes in pitch, with changes in voice for different characters. I am acting it out vocally. I am a living radio show, if you will. And many children learn well that way. My husband's one. He can read. It was a struggle for him because he's dyslexic. But to this day, he absorbs material much better if he sees it, acted it out, or if he listens to it. He loves audiobooks. They weren't available when he was in school. Had they been, he would probably be an engineer now, because he has that thinking pattern and that ability to visualize three-dimensionally and that creativity. But those things did not exist when he was young. My friend Linda in the chat room said that's how her dad told and read stories to us. And it was the way I was read to, and the way I was taught to read aloud. The whole idea, as my friend Rod has said, and my friend Yo in the chat room today, that somehow or other you can compensate people by giving them things, and that will make them want to go work for things, baffles me why anybody believes that. That's not compassion, ladies and gentlemen. That's slavery. And for African Americans to blindly follow a man who is doing everything in his power to make them permanent slaves, I am totally astonished. I really am. Why on earth would anybody voluntarily bend over and assume a slave collar? I'll tell you why. Because it's easier to beg than it is to work. And if all you're concerned about is a full belly, you don't care whether you're wearing a slave collar or not. And if you don't get taught that there are more things than a full belly, you will remain content to wear the slave collar. That is the reason why it was illegal to teach a slave to read. Because he might figure out that there was more in the world than he was getting. And what we have is voluntary slavery. Because they do not and will not understand that when you are dependent on someone else for your well-being, you are not free. Our public education system was supposed to be a bulwark for freedom. It was supposed to be the epitome of freedom. It was why many, many of the immigrants who came here in the first part of the 19th and latter part of the 19th and early part of the 20th century, it's why they came here, because their kids could go to school for free. And that didn't happen where they came from. because they were peasants. They were working class or below. And school was for the rich. For heaven's sake, in the colonies, schools were for the rich, except Massachusetts, where you had to learn how to be able to read so you could read your Bible according to the rules of the Pilgrims and the Puritans. Education was a privilege of the rich when our country began. And men like Jefferson and Hancock, with George Mason, the planters of the Tidewater, the Virginians who basically created the foundation, like George Mason with his Virginia Declaration of Rights, which almost word for word became our Bill of Rights. These were well-educated men because they came from wealthy families. The exceptions were people like Roger Sherman. He was a cobbler. He was a businessman. He was self-educated. Benjamin Franklin, same thing. But all of them, rich and poor, self-educated, understood that education was the key to progress as an individual and as a nation. And that's why they all wanted to see free education for everyone. We don't have free education. Well, now, what we have is free babysitting, psychological counseling, and socialization and fun places. I attended, perforce, this morning, a class meeting with the 8th graders in our school, where this happens a couple of times a semester for each of the grade levels, where the principal and assistant principal talk with the students about situations or events or patterns of behavior that need to be addressed. And the 8th graders, this morning, were up in arms pretty much when they were asked for their opinions about how they were being treated very immaturely and like they were babies, because they were having to, instead of being able to go to the lunchroom when it was time on their own and sit where they wanted, they were having to get in line and follow their teacher, and they had to get a pass to go to the snack window, and they were being treated like third graders, like elementary school. And the principal's response was, well, the reason that happened is because some of you couldn't act mature like eighth graders. The cafeteria was a filthy mess because you were throwing food on the floor. Everybody was screaming, howling, pushing each other, shoving each other. So because you couldn't act like eighth graders, you're going to go back to being treated the way you acted, like third graders. Well, they were real upset about that. And when I got my two eighth grade boys back to the ISS room, I explained to them that in order to be given the privileges of maturity, you have to demonstrate that you have achieved some maturity and can act in a mature way. You will be treated as you deserve to be treated. Act like a third grader, we'll treat you like you're a third grader. Act like an eighth grader, you can be treated like an eighth grader. And I told the two boys that were in my room, I am not saying that you've done these things. But I am saying that when you laugh and think it's cool when somebody else does, that means everybody else is going to think it's cool too. And pretty soon it's not 20% of the eighth grade that's doing it, it's 40%. And then it's 50%. Because you're encouraging them to think that this is appropriate behavior. You're laughing. They think they're cool. You're telling them they're cool. And you're suffering for it. But this is part and parcel of the problem, ladies and gentlemen, of what is now considered to be education. These kids, because they have been socially promoted and told that they're special, and oh, aren't you wonderful, you're entitled to this, and no, you don't have to work extra hard at this because we know it's difficult for you, you just do half of it and we'll give you 100. Why are we surprised that they have no concept that there are rules, and those rules apply to everybody? They've been told that rules don't apply to them academically. Why is it so amazing that that spreads out to rules of behavior and common courtesy? When you're told by the actions of those who are supposed to be adults in authority that your behaviors don't have to be appropriate in one area, Should we be surprised that behavior is becoming inappropriate in lots of areas? I don't think we should be surprised at all. But it's that good old short-sighted unintended consequences dilemma again. When we teach our children that there are no consequences for their behaviors, we teach them that anything goes. And then when we try to impose consequences, all of a sudden we're abusive. We're treating them badly like they were third graders, because they have never been taught that they can't continue to act like a third grader by the time they're in eighth grade. And they're not expected to master eighth grade academic skills. Why should they master eighth grade behavior skills? They've been socially promoted because we don't want them to feel bad about themselves. Well, they feel so good about themselves that in a study done about 10, 12 years ago, American students, high school students, had the highest self-esteem quotient in developed countries and ranked 27th in their academic skills. Oh, they feel really good about themselves, but they don't know anything. But that's okay, they feel good about themselves, so all is well. This is that lovely long-term consequence of social promotion, ladies and gentlemen. The other con to it is, my friend Rod, what he exactly said is, and he's perfectly correct, they become what they're taught. Dumb them down and they become failures independent and more easily controlled. Someone who cannot think and make good decisions, who is told that he or she does not have to, is ripe for being controlled because they have never learned to control themselves. These kids have been cheated, all of them. My friend Linda said, cognito ergo sum. Uh-huh, yep. Although I would think that cognito et senso ergo sum, I think and I feel, therefore I am. Because we can't deny the emotional aspect of life. It's part of us. We are not Vulcans. We are not Borg. We are human beings. We have feelings and we have intellect. Our level of maturation depends on how well we integrate those two aspects of our nature. We have to be able to feel, but we also have to be able to think. We cannot eliminate one and focus only on the other. Both of those alternatives, all think and no feel or all feel and no think, will bring this nation to its knees in a heartbeat. We cannot continue to argue about whether we should socially promote or retain. We have to stop expecting the impossible outcome from the system that we have in place. It doesn't work. And it cannot work. And it won't change until we, the people, demand that it change. I believe that it is in the process of changing. I see it in the increase of those who homeschool. The incredible increase just in the last 2 years of online educational opportunities for students other than college level. I see it in places like Carpe Diem. My friend Rod mentioned something about the damage that social promotion and these idiot ideas do to all of us. And as he says, one of them who got turned off because, you know, why bother since they promote up people who don't learn, might have been educated thinking that he could be and might find the cure for cancer, but now is used to failing in the sense that, oh, well, I don't even have to try to stretch in any way because they're going to promote me anyway, so why should I bother? Everybody suffers, ladies and gentlemen, when we deliberately educate our kids to believe that they don't have to be responsible for their actions. Everybody suffers. stupid is not only incurable, stupid is dangerous. And we are creating and promoting and lauding stupid. Yes, we are. High schools that no longer recognize valedictorians because the valedictorian would make the people who only got C's feel bad. We are telling people who are bright and inventive and academically brilliant that they must hide their light under a bushel for fear that it will cause somebody else to get a headache. If that's the way to make this nation prosperous and a world leader, then I am a salamander. If you don't know what a salamander is, it's a little lizard, okay? My friend Rod says it's a third world mentality, and he's exactly right, because that's the progressive goal, to make the entire world the third world, to reduce prosperous nations to the level of Bangladesh so everybody's equal. My friend Linda says successful people, they're demonized, and they are. Anybody who has worked hard and built a business and become wealthy is considered to be a rich fat cat who's greedy and oppressive. And unless he or she gives away more than half of what he earns to charity, they are held up as worse than Pontius Pilate condemning Jesus to the cross. And if they do give half what they earn for charity, they're grudgingly accepted as political donors and still vilified for not paying their fair share in taxes, because they choose who gets their charitable money instead of the benevolent, all-wise, godlike government. Oh, Lord, my friend Rod said, our so-called leadership is now thinking about outlawing criminal background checks by employers. Oh, goody. I can just see when my husband worked for a jeweler. Oh, sure. I don't care whether you're a felon. I don't care whether you robbed six banks and you just got out after 20 years. Sure, come in and work in my jewelry repair shop where we keep diamonds and emeralds and so on available to our workers. Yeah, right, folks. I mean, and my friend Linda said, and she's right too, no one in high office is embedded either. She's quite right. We can't have background checks on our president, so why should we expect employers to have background checks on their employees? You know, I'm sorry. There's a difference between genuine compassion and fuzzy, pink-loving stupidity. I am, and yet, you know, anybody who dated an underage girl is labeled as a sex offender and can't live within a mile of a school. It doesn't make any sense. And we're all supposed to turn in our guns because an insane person killed 26 kids in Connecticut. And yet it's perfectly okay to say, no, you don't need to look into the background, criminal background, of somebody who may potentially work for you and handle your money. It makes no sense. It's like our penal system, which is another topic, and doesn't have anything to do with education, but we can't decide there whether we want to punish people or rehabilitate them, so we try to do both, and neither one of them happens. The absurdity of progressivism, as it's currently practiced, and as it was practiced in the early part of the 20th century, to any thinking individual, is obvious. But progressives don't appeal to thinking individuals, ladies and gentlemen. They appeal to those who believe that somebody else caused them not to have what they should have, which means what they want, or I'm rich and I feel guilty, so gee, I got to run around making laws so nobody else can be rich and feel guilty. I do not understand how anybody who has a functioning brain could follow Fabian socialism, communism, or Marxism. None of them have any basis in practical, logical reality. because none of them work with people. They might work very well with robots that you could program with the three laws of robotics, a la Isaac Asimov, but we're not robots. And believe me, I am in no way interested in becoming a member of the Borg Collective. I don't want to be a Borg. Don't try to make me one. Because thank fortune for the Second Amendment, I can still stop you. But of course, once they get rid of the Second Amendment, we'll all be happy Borgs, whether we want to be or not. And my friend Linda is quoting something that was talked about on Glenn's show tonight. The reason the Founding Fathers did the research into civilizations and types of governments and different ways of organizing people and so on before they put together the Constitution was because they wanted as small a government as they could get, just to the right, just a bit away from anarchy. Just a teeny bit left of anarchy. That was it. They didn't want the Sweden cradle to grave, we'll protect you by taking away your freedom so you can't make a bad choice kind of government. They had that under King George. They experienced it. They didn't want any more. They were brilliant men, all of them. They were men of their time, which meant that their knowledge of the world and how it worked, the sciences, technology, etc., was limited by the time in which they lived. They did not have access to the kind of information that we have today. And look what they built. And we sit here with, right now, me with this incredible machine, where I'm sitting here in my living room with a cat on my desk, talking to people as far away as China if they want to tune in. And the access to writings and pictures and art and music and culture and everything that this wonderful technological invention gives me, what would they have achieved with what we have now? Because they hadn't been taught to be complacent and dependent. Our kids are being taught to be both of those things. Feeling good about oneself is the ultimate goal of education. No, it's not. I hate to burst the progressive bubble for them, but no, we don't become educated to feel good about ourselves. We become educated so that we can do things that make us feel good about ourselves. It is achievement that gives us self-esteem, ladies and gentlemen. It isn't being handed a blue ribbon for showing up. That only works with four-year-olds. Even eight-year-olds can see through it. I am very, very, very sorry that human beings are not all perfect. Sort of sorry. Because if we were all perfect, we wouldn't have any disagreements, nobody would shoot anybody, everybody would be happy and content, and everybody would have everything they wanted, and nobody would make a mistake or hurt anyone or insult anyone or make somebody feel bad. Yeah, right. It's not going to happen, and it never will happen this side of paradise or whatever comes next. But progressives and their theories of education make the unwarranted assumption, as Icarus did, that they can become God. That they can redesign humanity, given enough power and enough money, they can retool every one of us, remachine us, fix the mechanical parts that don't work right, or just throw us on the junk heap so that we all run properly, and the world will be fine again. They can't get what they want, because what they want is impossible. It's impossible with human beings. There are people who are inherently sociopathic, who have absolutely no empathy, no ability to understand that other people have feelings and rights. These people will always exist, and they will always do things to others because they do not have empathy. There are always going to be people who, for whatever reason, have difficulty with learning. Physiological, emotional, psychological, whatever the cause, not everybody is born with an IQ of 212. Not everybody is born with an IQ of 3 either. But progressives in public education assume that somehow or other, if we throw enough money and enough kindness and enough self-esteem building and enough anti-bullying programs and enough pretty computer labs at kids, that we can somehow or other make everybody have the same intellectual quotient, the same ability to reason, the same ability to articulate, the same ability to learn, the same ability to retain knowledge, the same ability to share and communicate knowledge. We can't. And promising that we can is a vicious criminal lie. Yes, I said criminal. It's fraud, ladies and gentlemen, and that is a criminal activity. It is a felony, as a matter of fact. And telling the entire nation that everybody should have the chance to go to college, with the implication that everybody should go to college, is fraud. That's making a promise that you know you cannot keep. That is selling a rock and calling it a diamond. And then telling the person who bought the rock, when they discover it isn't a diamond, "Oh, but isn't it a pretty rock? Sit back and be happy and polish it." Which is pretty much what our current administration and all of his happy little cohorts are trying to do. They are selling you such pretty shiny rocks and telling you they're diamonds. And we are selling kids rocks and telling them they're diamonds. My friend Linda says the poor kids who can't even read after getting out of high school, what good would college do for them? Absolutely none. Linda sent me a link to an article. I think it was Linda. It was one of my friends anyway. I think it was one of my teacher friends who sent it. It was an article in a newspaper of a survey done among college students. What would they like to tell their high school teachers now that they were in college? It was college freshmen, actually. And everything that they wanted to tell their high school teachers was, don't give us the test to study before we take them. Don't give us a grade because we did extra credit, like cleaning the blackboard. Okay. Because when we got here, we found out that the professors don't do that. And nobody gives you the test to study and gives you back that exact test to take. Don't give us grades we didn't earn academically, because they're not going to do that for us here. Don't let us get by with plagiarism, because when we try it here, not only will we be kicked out of college, we can even be prosecuted. And believe me, the number of kids that I see who plagiarize without even understanding that they're doing it. And the teachers let them and tell them to. when they're writing an essay, copy and paste from this web article and put it in your essay. What? When I was researching today, I found several different essays on the pros and cons of social promotion that were printable. And the implication was, if you have to write an essay on that, here's one. You don't have to write it. Just print it, change a word here and there, put your name on it, and hand it in. Oh, yeah, there are lots of sites out there like that. Why are we surprised at the government we have, ladies and gentlemen, when we have been creating the people who voted for it for the last 30 years in our public schools? Why would we be surprised we have progressives feeding us rocks and calling them diamonds when we have been promoting the idea that stupidity is the norm for 30 years in our schools? My friend Linda said, boy, just a little taste of university opened up their eyes quickly. She's right, it did. They found out that, oh, guess what? Nobody is going to give you something you haven't earned. Oh, my God, what a shock. But academically, that had happened to them for 12 years. Why should they assume anything would be different when they went to college? Like those little Occupy Wall Street kiddies with their laptops, complaining that they actually have to pay back their student loans. There was a gentleman on, I believe it was Neil Cavuto's show, on Fox Business, Fox News this afternoon, whose success rate with finding the unemployed jobs was pretty astounding. And the main reason it was because he was honest with people who'd been unemployed for more than a year, saying to them, okay, look, you got to change your attitude. There is no such thing as being overqualified. You're going to have to go out there and actually take a job, even if it's two or three of them part-time, because you've got a much better shot at getting hired if you're already working, because it shows your potential employer that you've got some kind of a work ethic. He told the truth. And the people who couldn't stomach it just left and didn't have him keep looking, which is why he had something like an 80% success rate in placing people. Because he told him the truth, and the ones who were smart enough listened, did it, and were successful. We're doing the opposite with our kids. We're telling them, be lazy. So long as you feel good about yourself, that's what matters. Be stupid, because that way you won't make anybody feel bad because you're smarter than they are. You know, everybody gets a trophy because you tried. Well, damn, I can try all I want to climb Mount Everest, and I'm going to die. I really am. There is no way that I am physically capable of climbing that mountain. I don't care how many Sherpas carry me. I cannot do that. Fortunately, I don't wish to be a professional mountain climber. My body isn't all that good, but my brain still works, so I use it. What happens to these kids, these lovely little football players in high school, who are told that football is their way to college, learn just enough so you pass with a C, so you can stay on the team and you'll get a scholarship. And then when you hurt yourself freshman year, you think they're going to stay in college? No, they're not. I had a student when I was tutoring to whom that happened. Yeah, he was nursed through high school because he was a darn good halfback, went to college, played his first season, hurt himself, and he couldn't play anymore. Bye-bye college. When he came to me, he was 19 years old and reading on fourth grade level. His future was pretty bleak because he had been told that he didn't have to do anything except play a sport, and he was guaranteed that he was going to get rich. Because he was valuable to the university for a while. And then when he wasn't valuable anymore, the return on investment went down to zero, so he wasn't needed anymore. So he failed. Okay. And unfortunately, The way our public education system is moving, we are creating an entire generation of that young man. We are teaching them that they can't be allowed to fail, so that when we're done with them, all they can do is fail. We are teaching them that there are no consequences for your actions. And we are doing it because, for whatever reason, we cannot see that we are not working our system correctly. It needs real reform, not just more money, more teachers, higher salaries, pretty computer labs. We need to scrap it and start over using the technology in a sensible, logical way. With less teachers and more computer access than just, oh, let's take the state standards of learning tests in the computer lab, or let's go to the computer lab this week so you can research for your paper. We have the technology, we can fix it. Yeah. Pretend it's a $6 million man and you're a Hollywood screenwriter. Lord, that ought to appeal to our present administration with the First Lady awarding the Best Picture Oscar. Oh my God. I'm sorry, but that sickens me, ladies and gentlemen. It is not the function of a First Lady to play presenter on an Academy Awards show. It is undignified. Not that I expect dignity from that quarter, but it would be nice if a little bit of it showed every once in a while between the skinny jeans and the gold lemonade tops. But of course, you can't fix stupid. And to quote another proverb, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear either. And boy, will I get comments about how racist I am with that. And I am not talking about what color the sow is. It doesn't matter. A sow is a sow, no matter what color it is. I believe, ladies and gentlemen, in the principles upon which this nation was founded. The belief that liberty for all is the highest goal. The belief that opportunity for all is the prime reason for our nation. The belief that you should have the chance to go as far and fly as high as your desires and your abilities will take you, no matter what your background is, no matter what group you belong to, no matter your age, your weight, or your smell. If you can do it, you deserve the chance to try it. And I believe that we cannot govern ourselves as a nation if we do not learn to govern ourselves as individuals. And I believe that there is such a thing as right and wrong. And I believe that there is good and there is evil. And until and unless the rest of us who believe the way I do stand up on our hind legs and say no, loudly and clearly and repeatedly, we will continue to go down the happy little good intention paved road to you know where that we're standing on now. And I believe there are enough people out there who share my beliefs who are standing up and saying no. My friend Rod said that our president is used to having only yes men around him, and that's quite true. He is. And basically, that's the kind of educational system we're creating, where the teachers, administrators, and everybody else are just yes men to the children. That what we care about is making them happy. Well, that's nice, but no, you can't make somebody else happy by giving them things they haven't earned. Not real happiness. Happiness isn't just pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. Happiness is knowing that you can do and have the opportunity to try. And there is no guarantee in our Constitution. And there was no guarantee in the beginning of the Declaration of Independence that we would give you happiness. You would be given by God the right to look for it. Didn't say you would find it. There isn't any guarantee, ladies and gentlemen, that everybody is going to be smart and everybody is going to be competent and everybody is going to succeed at everything they try, that everybody is going to have the same amount of stuff in their house as everybody else, or that everybody is going to live in the same kind of house as everybody else. I live in a very weird house. So weird that there's no way that my husband and I can qualify for a reverse mortgage because there isn't anything like it anywhere in the local area, which includes half of Virginia. Yeah, we live in a weird house. So because they can't value it based on comparable properties, there's no way we can get a reverse mortgage. So we can't get a reverse mortgage. What am I going to do? Go shoot somebody? No, of course not. I'm going to keep working, pay off the mortgage I've got, and hopefully live long enough to do so I can enjoy living in a house that's fully paid for. If I don't make it, I don't make it. If I do, whoopee. But I'm certainly not going to go scream to the government in Richmond or the government in Washington that I should be allowed to not follow the rules that everybody else has to. Well, I don't follow those rules in the style of house I live in, but I know darn good and well that that means I'm not going to be evaluated financially the same way as somebody who did follow the rules as to what's a proper house. And I accept that. I like my house. I like living in my house. And being an individual isn't any bed of roses. Okay? Everybody isn't going to love me. Everybody isn't going to say I'm wonderful. Everybody isn't going to tell me how perfectly special I am. Some people aren't going to like me. Some people are going to positively despise me. So, that's the way life is. I don't think everybody I know is wonderful. Some of the people I know I can't stand. But that's the case with all of us. And our kids need to understand this. Some of you may remember that I worked for a while with an Asperger's syndrome student who had a habit of throwing tantrums and crying whenever he didn't get his way or when something was hard. And the general procedure was to take him out of class. And when he did that with me, I took him out of class and sat down and I didn't say anything. And he kept crying and, well, you. And finally I got tired of it. I said, okay, what is it that you want me to do? He said, well, I want you to rub my back and tell me it's all right. And I said, oh, you want me to lie to you? He kind of jumped back. He said, no, I didn't say that. I said, yes, you did. You told me you wanted me to say that everything was all right. It isn't. Your behavior is not all right. You disrupted the entire class. You are sitting out here crying when you should be in there learning. I won't lie to you and tell you that that's all right. It's not all right. Oh, guess what? We didn't have any more tantrums. Surprise! His mother was absolutely astounded. But she'd spent 12 and a half years telling him, you can't help it, poor little thing, go ahead. And I wouldn't do it. Because I knew that he wouldn't always be protected with a one-on-one aide and in grade school for the rest of his life. Everybody's got to grow up sometime. I feel very sorry for those who mentally and physically may never be able to grow up completely. I truly do. And yes, people need to help them, and a place needs to be made for them. Because they are deserving of compassion. But compassion is not telling them that they are grown up and sending them out to fend for themselves when you know darn good and well they can't. And compassion is not telling someone who can learn self-control that he doesn't have to and waiting for him to explode in the wrong face and get killed. Because that can happen. I don't like lies, ladies and gentlemen, and I don't like liars. And right now, our public education system is in the hands of lies and liars. And unless we all stand up and say no more lies and no more stupid adherence to a system that doesn't work, we're going to be stuck with a future that none of us want to live in. For all of you out there who've joined us this evening, I want to say thank you for being here. For my friends in the chat room, Rod and Bill and Linda and Yo, who was with us for a while, and everybody else listening out there, and the folks who listen to the archives of these shows and all the other shows that Patriot Families puts out for you, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being truly the nation, for caring enough about this land and its culture and its beliefs to stand up and speak what you believe to be the truth, regardless of fear or favor. I told the two boys who I had in my ISS room today that physical courage is a great thing, but the mark of an adult human being is the ability to exhibit moral courage, to stand up and speak truth, even though you might be laughed at, even though your friends might turn away from you, even though your buddies might call you names or talk behind your back. That is maturity. And moral courage isn't easy. I say thank you to my friend Bill for the lovely compliment. And to my friend Linda, I'm so glad that you all are here to support me. And so glad that you believe, as I do, that all of us are teachers. And that the best thing we can do for our world is to continue to speak out and to tell the truth and to teach what we know and what we've learned. Whether it's in a classroom or a grocery store, a college campus, or Walmart. We are the nation, ladies and gentlemen. And this nation will live or die according to what we do. Like my friend Linda says, speak out at the city council, which she did yesterday. She is a warrior against Agenda 21, ladies and gentlemen, and I applaud her courage. That is an example of moral courage that I wish I could illustrate better to the kids I teach. Because it is only moral courage, ladies and gentlemen, that will keep the Republic that Dr. Franklin and the rest of the men in the Constitutional Convention gave us. Moral courage and the understanding that each and every one of us is responsible for what we do, and that failure is an option, but it isn't the end of the world. Thank you again for being here, ladies and gentlemen. Please join us next Thursday at 6 p.m. for Patriot Education. Visit us on our website, www.patriotfamilies.com. Listen to Blog Talk every night of the week. We have a show for you. And I hope that every single one of you has a wonderful evening, a great weekend, and that the weather cooperates so you're not hip-deep in snow or driving in ice or in a drought or flooded out or any of the other major natural disasters, and that you and yours are healthy, happy, and prosperous. Thanks again, ladies and gentlemen, for being here, and see you next week. Good night, and God bless.